Cars are cars all over the world, similarly made, similarly sold. In a motorcade, abandoned when alone. Cars are cars all over the world.
And good afternoon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall, and today it's Midday on Cars with our good friend John Davis. He's the creator, producer, and host of Motor Week. It's now in its 43rd season. Motor Week is the longest-running automotive show on TV. It's produced at MPT here in Maryland and syndicated on PBS stations across the country. Gas prices are creeping up again after a long slide downward from a peak of about $5 a gallon in a lot of places in 2022. We're back down to a national average today of $3.46. It's a little higher than it was a year ago at this time. Here in Maryland, we're a little bit higher by about a nickel, I guess, $3.51. And here in our state, sales of gas-powered passenger cars and light trucks will be phased out by 2035. That's in 11 years. So as we transition to electric, what kind of choices will we have and what will they cost? John Davis is with us for the hour today to take your questions and comments about all things automotive. If you're in the market for a new car, what are you thinking of buying? Is this a good time to buy? If you have a car to sell, is it a good time to be doing that? So what's your experience been so far on the new or used market, and how are you feeling about going electric? We'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. That's our number. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And John Davis joins us on Zoom. John, always great to talk to you.
Tom, delighted to be with you again. And thanks for asking me to be on.
Well, there's all sorts of stuff to talk about. And I want to start right away with an email we've gotten from a listener in Easton, Paul. Because it's interesting, Paul's assumptions and impression of the market may not be accurate. I mean, let's just put it that way.
He won't be alone,
yeah.
I guarantee that.
Paul says, I'm ready and eager to buy a small American-made EV with good range, but there's almost nothing to choose from. Why do all car companies insist on building nothing but huge SUVs? What's your reaction to Paul's impression there of the current market?
Well, I'd say, Paul, there's a little vehicle called the Chevrolet Bolt, B-O-L-T, and the Bolt SUV, a slightly boxier model that had been around for some years now, and it's small and it's affordable, meaning that by the time you're done with incentives, you're around 30 grand, which is way less than what the average vehicle gets sold for. There's also another one called the Volkswagen ID4, which is made in Tennessee. Different vehicles out there, some more expensive than others, but there is a trickling down of EVs to the lower or more affordable end of the market. And that's actually going to be accelerating this year with the advent of a number of new models, particularly two new affordable SUV EVs from General Motors, from Chevrolet. So they're out there. They've been out there. They're not as numerous as some of the higher end models. They don't get all the publicity. And indeed, the Bolt's actually going out of production, so a new Bolt can come in. But they are there, perhaps just not as obvious as and didn't get as much publicity from the manufacturers as they should have.
Yeah, and Paul, I don't deny that, you know, as you look for a car, you're having the impression that, you know, it's just all these big SUVs are the only thing that the car manufacturers are concentrating on. But Car and Driver magazine reports there are now 57 EV models for sale in the United States. And that's, John, that's a lot more than there used to be, isn't it?
Yes, and it's one of the reasons you see so many headlines about EV sales slowing. And it's true that the overall rate of growth, and we can get into this in depth a little bit later, has slowed, and that the number of EVs sitting on lots, that's gotten a lot of publicity. It's roughly 120 days or about twice what you normally want to see as far as the day's supply on a dealer's lots. But that's because we've got so many more models, and that number is going to probably be close to 100, if not over it, by the end of this calendar year. So there's just a lot more models. Your early adopters already have their Teslas and whatever, and now it's up to the rest of us. And it's a harder sale than either the governments or the automakers thought.
Car and Driver also reports that the price of electric cars is coming way down. Yes. They say 2 years ago, folks paid about $17,000 more for a new electric car than they would for a new gas-powered car. But that gap is closing. So last month, it was about $5,000 difference between electric and gas-powered. Is that trend going to continue? Are we going to basically get to even parity pretty soon?
I don't think it's pretty soon. There were a number of boasts a few years ago that they would get the cost of basically providing an electric powertrain and powering it down to internal combustions by virtually now. I think that's probably still kicking that can down the road about 5 years. And the reason a lot of people don't believe statistics like that is when they go into the dealers, they want to buy the car. That's the natural inclination. Well, if you go in to buy an electric vehicle, you're now caught up in all of the rules and regulations. If you're in Maryland, of the California laws, otherwise the federal subsidies, which can be as much as $7,500 per vehicle. And that gets involved with what, not only where the vehicle is assembled, but where the minerals for the battery come from, where the battery itself is made. And that's why you will see ads like I got in the mail yesterday or over the weekend. A Mercedes-Benz is offering $17,500 off of some of their vehicles if you lease it, because some of the government incentives are only available to a wide variety of models if they're leased, not if they're bought. Don't blame me. Don't blame any car company. It's simply the way they wrote the law in Washington.
Yeah, interesting that they would favor leasing over purchasing. But I'm not quite
sure. It was
sure
an
why.
Accident. It was a complete oversight. They did not mean to leave a leasing loophole, but they did.
Let's go to Nick. He's on the line in Catonsville. Welcome to Midday with John Davis.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having this show. I wanted to call and share my experience shopping for a car this past few weeks. I've been keeping my eye out for an EV, and as the other person said, I really wanted a small one. I wanted a small car. I wasn't looking for an SUV or even a crossover. And so I had my eye on actually the Volkswagen e-Golf, which is basically a Golf with an electric engine in it. Right. And it's basically a first-generation kind of EV. It's only got 125-mile range, but, you know, my commute is not that long, and it's really quick to charge up. It's got fast charging on it anyway, so it's a great little car. And with the used EV tax credit, you know, that's $4,000 on a used EV. Right. That brought the price down closer to 10 than it is 20. It was just a great deal, really easy decision to make. And the only problem that I have with it is that I live in a townhouse without assigned parking, so I can't really charge at home easily, but it's been pretty easy to do it with public charging.
You're in the situation that a lot of people are. First of all, you made a great choice, because basically the e-Golf drives just like you would expect a Volkswagen Golf or any German sedan, and yet on the used market, extremely affordable, and you don't need the miles, the long range. So you really did an extremely good piece of research and a good purchase decision. There are a few other vehicles coming on the market this year, notably the Fiat E500, that will sort of fill that gap for new car owners. And I would direct people over to the ID4 at Volkswagen, even their entry-level model, if they're looking for a new car. But very good choice and very good evaluation.
You know, cars just are expensive. There's no way around it. I guess the average price of a car is about $47,000, $46,000 this year, and that's up from $39,000 just a year ago. But certain kinds of cars, like Tesla, has really slashed their prices. I'm not quite sure why, but I understand the base Model 3 sedan used to cost $47,000 at the beginning of 2023, a year ago, and now it's selling for $39,000. So they've reduced it, you know, really dramatically. What's going on with Tesla? Why are they making the cars so cheap all of a sudden?
Because they have so much competition now. They basically are doing what businesses that dominate a market have always done. When new competitors come in, you do whatever you can to keep your factories humming and to slash your market share. And it also reflects that because he builds now so many EV vehicles, and EV vehicles cost less to build than an internal combustion engine vehicle, he's making a ton of money on each vehicle he sells, and he can afford to slash the prices to remain competitive. That's why Tesla still has about 55% of the electric vehicle market, although that will probably continue to drop. So he's out there to make sure his company stays profitable. And in the car business, I don't care what kind of car you make, the more vehicles you sell, the more profitable you are. It's always about selling more.
And there are a bunch of new companies in the market. There are companies that I've never heard of, that are, I guess, starting to get a hold. So it's not just the big three automakers. I mean, I had a list in front of me that I'm now. Oh, here it is: Lucid, Canoo, Rivian. Are these things? Is this going to be like the 1920s when there were 100 different car companies that, eventually whittled themselves down to three? I mean, what are these new companies doing that's any different than GM and Ford, et cetera?
Well, there is an economic adage that basically says when there's new technology that new companies do it better than old companies. And I think Tesla is a good indicator that has come true. But there are other companies, sort of call them mini Teslas. Rivian is one who has been very successful so far in selling both a midsize pickup truck and an SUV. They just last week showed two new smaller SUVs coming. They're burning through cash. They're not profitable yet, but they'll probably be around. Lucid, who so far has been at the top, the very $150,000 plus end of the market, their future may be a little more questionable. And some of the other startups that did come along over the last 5 years, they have come and gone. And there's one right now called Fisker, who's on the cusp of maybe filing for bankruptcy a second time. So it's very difficult still to get into the vehicle development business. Amazon just threw in the towel, said they weren't going to develop an EV after all. But those that have been in it for a while and have had good backing, like Rivian and Tesla, they're probably going to be around to stay.
Here's a little clip from one of your recent Motor Week episodes about GM and their electric vehicle portfolio.
There's a lot of news surrounding GM's expanding electric vehicle portfolio. And that includes Chevrolet, where it's going to be a big year for the electric bow tie, starting with the Blazer EV SUV. The Blazer name was revived a few years ago, not as an off-road contender, but as a two-row midsize crossover for the urban sprawl. The Blazer EV may be related in both name and ethos, but that's about where the similarities end.
So, John, it's not that the car companies are getting out of the business of making SUVs, evidently. They're adding it to the portfolio of electric vehicles. Yeah.
Including, it's really across the board. And I think we at Motor Week, we tend to single out a company like Kia for that, because they now offer electrified and all electric SUVs in almost every size and price range. And there you were talking about how the price is coming down for EVs, and that's what they've been doing. One of our best picks of the year, the Kia EV9, essentially takes the three-row family SUV, the Telluride, very popular for them, but that's with an internal combustion engine, and reintroduces that same concept with an electric motor, and it's off to a great start. So, yes, there right now, nobody is looking at the instant demise of internal combustion engine vehicles. And I think indeed, even the governments are starting to realize maybe they were a little premature, and we're starting to see some softening on the federal level, at least. Internal combustion engine vehicles are going to be around for a long time, but EVs also are going to increase their market share. They are growing in sales despite some of the publicity and the stories that we've seen over the last few months. It's just slower.
Let's go to Susan, who has a good question about EVs and the batteries. Susan's on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with John Davis.
Hi. I have to say that I love Motor Week and I love Midday.
Well, thank you. Thank you from both of us.
So right-wing media would have us believe that battery fires are common and commonly fatal. And I just don't know the truth, and I would like John to address that.
Battery fires are no more frequent than gasoline fires, as a matter of fact, because that's per capita. So since there aren't as many electric vehicles out there, there's actually in numbers far fewer electric fires than there are gasoline fires. So that's just a myth, and you don't read about them every day. And indeed, you don't hear of a fire department in your area having to put one out every day. However, when they do have one, it can be disastrous to the property because the vehicle is harder to put out. You don't put it out with water. You have to use chemicals. Usually the fire department has to have gone through some specialized training, which a lot of them have. And this has been going on now for, I think, about 10 years. So EV fires are not frequent. They are not usually deadly unless someone is trapped in the vehicle. And even there, I haven't heard of one in a long time. But they are difficult to put out, more so than putting out a gasoline fire. But then again, on a gas fire, it's hard to fight it with water as well.
All right. Thanks for that good question, Susan. It's always great to have John able to, dispel some urban myths. Let me add, John, before we take a break, let me ask you to comment on an email from a listener named Mike, who says there's no reason for EVs to be so exorbitantly expensive. They are intrinsically simpler than ICE cars, internal combustion engine cars. They have fewer parts and some run on solar power or hydrogen fuel cells. China is proving that EVs can be cheap, while Detroit milks the market driven by federal financial credits with EV bloatmobiles. That's what he says, EV bloatmobiles. What about Mike's point that they're doing it cheaper in China and Detroit hasn't figured it out? What's your reaction to that perspective?
Well, they do everything as far as automotive cheaper in China because most of their automotive companies there have been heavily subsidized by the Chinese government because of all the money they get in from people like us that buy all their products. Yes, you can buy an EV in China much cheaper. You can actually import a car from China. And even after paying the 26.4% tariff on it, still sell it than cheaper than a lot of U.S.-made vehicles. But the Chinese right now control a lot of the rare earth minerals that are used in EV batteries. The battery is what is expensive. And if you, even in China, if you compare what it costs to make an EV versus an internal combustion engine vehicle, the EV is still more expensive. And somebody has to pay all of the research and development. It doesn't come for free. So I would contend that Detroit is not milking it. There is no U.S. automaker right now that is actually making money on electric vehicles, with the exception of Tesla.
John Davis is the creator, producer, and host of Motor Week. It airs on MPT and PBS stations across the country. We'll have more with John after a quick break. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. We're going to talk about hybrids in particular when we come back after this quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
The
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. I want to reemphasize what you just heard from Rachel Bay, this programming note Wednesday during Morning Edition. Rachel will share her reporting about the juvenile justice system in Maryland. Each year, hundreds of Maryland teens are automatically charged in adult court. That's more than almost any other state. And Rachel spent most of the last year looking into this in a special WYPR and APM report. So she will probe the reasons that judges give when they deny teens access to mental health programs through the juvenile courts. So listen for Rachel's report Wednesday. She'll talk about it with Sheila Cast on the Record that morning, and she'll be my guest here on Midday Friday to look into it further. And by the way, coming up tomorrow here on Midday, Maryland Comptroller Brooke Learman joins me to talk about her recent State of the Maryland Economy report, and Ann Cotton of the Schaefer Center for Public Policy will discuss how to create a pipeline for public service. So what'll it take to get young people interested in a career in the public sector? We'll talk about that tomorrow here on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, my guest is John Davis, the creator, producer, and host of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. We're taking your questions and comments about cars. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So, John, it turns out in terms of the electric side of the car fence, it's not just the fully electric cars that are attracting attention, but in fact, hybrids that have both gas and electric possibilities are now, according to a piece in just today's Wall Street Journal, the most popular cars on the market. So where do you see that heading in terms of trends?
It's taken 10 years for someone to actually figure out, which was obvious to most of us in the business a long time ago, that if you want to get to a nation that's running purely on electric, you need to do it in steps. Toyota's been showing us that hybrid gasoline electric vehicles were extraordinarily efficient for a long time now. And their plug-in hybrids, where you basically have gas, electric, but a sizable enough battery to run 30, 40 miles on pure electric alone, that was the logical bridge to a fully electric future. But the governments in the federal government, and to a large degree those in California, which dictates Maryland's rules, they have largely ignored that until now, until they now start to see they're not going to meet their goals of being fully electric probably by 2035, and they need a help. And that help is going to come in the way of tried and true technology in hybrids and plug-in hybrids. You know, last year, battery electric vehicles, pure electric, they were about 8% of the market. But if you add in regular hybrids like the Toyota Prius and the plug-in hybrids, you're up to 16% of the U.S. market. And I think the future in this country for a while is going to lean more heavily towards plug-in hybrids than we have before.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal reporting today that the hybrid sales grew over the last 5 years 40%. So they're, you know, they have continually gone up. We have a question from Stephanie about a new Toyota car. Have you heard anything from Toyota about the production of a new small truck in 2024-25 called the Toyota Stout?
There have been consistent rumors that Toyota would try to do some kind of true compact pickup truck, because they want something that competes with the Ford Maverick. So we don't know much more than what the rumors are around. They are saying basically it's going to be something priced in the low 20s to start with. That would be about the price that you could get with a Maverick. The Stout is not a new name for Toyota, and I think it's probably there's some truth there. They used to make a Stout back in the 50s. I think it was through most of the 80s, and there's been no official announcement, but I do think a smaller car-based pickup truck from Toyota to do battle with the Ford Maverick is due probably within the next 12 to 18 months.
Let's go to Clarence on the line from Baltimore County. Welcome to Midday with John Davis.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Thanks for taking the call, and good afternoon. I was in Costco's, and I saw the charging apparatus they had, and it cost about $500. And I was just thinking to myself, well, buy that, and then that adds on to the cost. You need an electrician to hook it up to your house.
Right.
But I'm wondering now if we're not putting the cart before the horse, or that we have to create a balance here, because as more and more people start putting chargers in their homes, aren't we creating, adding on to that situation where during the summer months and air conditionings are running, that we're putting a strain on the grid? And secondly, do you think that the government should step in and do something about charging on the road? My thinking as an old school technician is that we should have charging stations that are, you know, somewhere placed strategically throughout the country that are non-fossil fuel. We fuel those stations with hydrogen and to as recharging stations, and then it's non-fossil when it's off the grid. That's just my question. Are we creating, you know, a situation where, you know, we're going to stress out the grids as more and more people come online and start putting demands on the line with, you know, charging their vehicles at home?
All right. Thanks, Clarence. It's always great to hear from you. And we have another call on that same vein, an email actually from Loretta, John, who says, all mechanics and Republicans I speak to say that electric cars are not environmentally friendly because they're produced using fossil fuels. Is this a myth? So what's your reaction?
There's some truth to all of this. Let me try and tackle some of the things that Clarence says. First of all, you do, if you have one of these home chargers that you buy at Costco or anywhere else, it usually requires something like a dryer circuit, a 240 dryer circuit in your home to hook it up. And that's so you can have level two charging, as it's called, at about 240 volts. And that's perfectly adequate to charge at least partially every electric car out there overnight, enough to probably get you through the next day if you're just using it for commuting. For that matter, if you don't drive your electric car that much, you can plug it into a normal 110 outlet and probably replenish it enough to get your daily duties done for the next day or so. So all of that's true. And since that charging mostly happens overnight, or so the theory goes, that shouldn't put a huge extra load on the grid. What does put loads on the grid is when you go after these high-speed chargers, what we call level three chargers, that you find at Walmarts and under names like EV America and, of course, the Tesla superchargers that have a lot more voltage and can charge your vehicle up to about 80% of its capacity in under an hour. Those, as they proliferate, are indeed going to put a lot more strain on the grid because they operate during the daylight hours. And I think it is a concern. And I don't know anybody that's in the electric utility business that isn't concerned about it. I had one gentleman from one big utility in the Midwest tell me that they didn't even have enough electricity at their location to put in the high-speed chargers that they want. As far as the idea that right now electric vehicles are being charged by fossil fuels, that's true. We still get most of our electricity in this country by coal, and that coal is feeding a lot of electric chargers in a lot of places around the country. But that's also changing. because the electric utilities have lots of mandates to go to greener forms of energy. And some major companies, I think it's Chicago Edison, have virtually already done that as far as becoming fossil fuel free or almost free utility. Relying, however, strictly on solar and windmills is a dicey situation if you don't get enough, because they depend on atmospheric conditions. So nothing is perfect, nothing is free, but the idea that building an electric car is somehow worse for the environment than a gasoline-powered vehicle, I think that's probably a stretch, and I don't know any reliable researcher that can actually verify that. And it's also going to change over time as more and more energy is produced by green sources.
John Davis is the host, the creator and producer of Motor Week on MPT. It's Midday on Cars. I'm Tom Hall. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org. And before we go back to the phones, John, an email from Veronica in Randallstown. Can you comment about the exorbitant cost of replacing a battery on an electric vehicle? Now, as I understand it, one of the reasons that prices of EVs are coming down is that batteries are getting cheaper to manufacture. But still, if your battery goes out on an EV, it's a significant investment to replace it, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but it's also covered by, at minimum, an 8-year, 100,000-mile warranty. You could argue that we're building throwaway cars, that people are not going to want to own an electric vehicle with a big battery after that point, and I think there may be some truth to it, but there's also very little evidence that these batteries fail very quickly. There are plenty of electric vehicles running around now that are well over 10 years old that are on their first battery. Mind you, it's not as powerful, doesn't have as much range as it used to, but it's still running. And the California mandates that Maryland must adhere to at the moment stipulate that, I believe it's at the 10-year mark in the battery's life, it still has to have 75% of its capacity left. I think it's something like that. So frankly, in real terms, battery replacement is not an issue. And there's a very good warranty that comes with every electric vehicle battery.
Let's go back to the phones. Jim is on the line from Frederick. Welcome to the show, Midday on Cars with our good friend John Davis.
Yes, thanks, Tom. John, so my thought is a little off topic, but it concerns basically the cultural shift we really need. In other words, there's a thought out there, and I'm an EV owner, by the way, so I'm in maybe some ways hypocritical in this, but I try to reduce my driving. But the cultural shift I think we need is starting to be addressed by a concept called transportation as a service. I wonder if you've heard of that. My understanding is, I believe it's in Arizona, this has been experimented with. So there are futuristic communities that people do not own cars. So transportation as a service refers to living in one of these eco communities and having companies provide transportation to you as you need it. So this incorporates also autonomous vehicles. So you would call or you would text, say, I need a car to go, to shop or whatever. So the company, service company would send it around to you. You do your business, they go back, et cetera.
Yeah, just so fewer people would own cars. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, thanks for that call, Jim. You know, I don't know. What do you think, John? Is the political movement towards public transportation more affected and attenuated even because of the advent and the increasing popularity of EVs, which are cheaper to run than gas-powered cars?
I guess I'd have to say on basis, I don't think so, because, I mean, we've had ride sharing and car sharing around for a long time now. And some areas, like densely populated areas, it's very popular. And indeed, in many of those places, it has displaced car ownership, which I think is a good thing. And I also think the advent of EVs for mass transportation also should help things like bus services and all be able to expand without adding to the pollution aspect. But we're a spread out country. And if you live in a suburb, which most Americans more and more seem to do, I just don't see where ride sharing is that practical. But if you were going to build a new community and build it around not having a vehicle, I think that's a laudable goal. And I'm sure you'd probably have a significant number of takers. And why not? If you don't have to provide the infrastructure for automobiles, you could save a lot of money.
John Davis, he's the creative heart behind Motor Week, which airs on MPT at 5 o'clock on Saturdays. The show is now in its 43rd season, the longest-running automotive show on television. And you can join us when we come back from a quick break, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. We've got a couple of phone lines open, so feel free to get online. John Davis, a very popular guy when it comes to his appearances here on Midday. We are glad to have him and glad to have you. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile, my curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go. Riding along in my
And welcome back. It's Midday on Cars. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we are talking all things automotive with John Davis, the creator, host, and producer of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. To join us, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. Here's another clip from a recent episode of Motor Week where they announced their Driver's Choice Best of the Year car.
The Ford Mustang is our 2024 Motor Week Driver's Choice Best of the Year. The new 7th generation Mustang boasts serious updates that are just adding insult to injury to the competitors that it has left in the dust. Yes, no more Camaros or Challengers for now, as the Mustang gallops on as the last remaining pony car.
John, the last remaining pony car, huh? The Mustang. And that's what everybody voted for. Interesting choice.
First and last.
Interesting choice. Now,
our awards are very much about vehicles that we just love to drive and also value. And we love the new Mustang, and it's a great car for the value. And after all, Ford's already taken the Mustang name and ensured its future by enshrining it in their electric Mustang, so the Mach-E. So we think Mustang all the way around is a good choice. And yes, it was our pick of the year.
And I have a soft spot in my heart for Mustangs for a reason not related to the car directly. But of course, the Mustang.
Is that a story we want to hear?
It's a story I'll tell you briefly. It's the inventor of the Mustang was Lee Iacocca.
Yes, indeed.
And our family lived in the Detroit area for a little while when I was a very little kid. This is in the 1960s. I was the altar boy at Lee Iacocca's daughter's wedding.
How about that?
And for years, I heard later from the sister of the woman who was married when I was the altar boy, for years, there was a picture of me and the priest and the wedding party on Lee Iacocca's desk for decades, you know, a picture from the wedding. And I was there on Lee Iacocca's desk as a third grader at St. Hugo of the Hills Catholic Church. So that's my connection.
That is a great great.
My brush with greatness had to do with Leo Iacocca's daughter getting married, and he was a very well-known man at the time.
Oh yeah,
because he was a big deal in Detroit. Let's go to Ralph, who's on the line from Lutherville. Welcome to Midday with John Davis.
Hi, Tom and John. I just wanted to follow up on comments earlier. The person said electric cars are more polluting. What you guys didn't mention is the whole idea behind electric cars is to reduce emissions, which are the source of greenhouse gases, as well as coal plants, et cetera. And also, even if we were burning all coal plants everywhere, they're still going to be producing the same amount of pollution as they do now. They don't distinguish whether you plug in a light or an electric car. So the fact you have electric cars will reduce emissions. And doesn't that sound right?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I mean, for every electric vehicle, when it displaces a gasoline-powered or diesel-powered vehicle, is emitting less CO2 into the atmosphere. And even if we were talking about hydrogen fuel cells, which we didn't really get to in a previous call or asked about it, ultimately, battery electric vehicles will probably give way to fuel cell powered vehicles, where the fuel cell replaces the battery and will reduce emissions even more. But right now, hydrogen takes too much electricity to produce to be feasible. But that too is coming. The ultimate goal, some long time after I'm probably gone, will be, instead of battery electric vehicles, we'll be talking about mostly hydrogen fuel cell powered vehicles.
Here's an interesting question that I myself happened to have some interaction with recently. What information, this is from Robert in Parkville, what information is collected by newer vehicles, and who buys that information, and how is it sold?
Oh, this is a huge thing. The simple fact is, every time you use your smartphone, whether it's in a car or out, they're collecting data on you. One of the reasons automakers like General Motors have switched over to a Google system is because they want more control over that information about where you're going, what destinations you pick that might somehow be turned into advertising advantages for someone that would buy that information from them. There's an awful lot of information out there. I don't think anyone has a clue on how it could possibly be completely controlled. And the more you use the electronics on board the car, whether it's from your phone or embedded in the car, the more information they're going to have about you. And it's eventually going to be used in some way, shape, or form to try to entice you to buy a service or a product. That's just sort of the way we are.
Yeah, indeed. Just last Friday, a couple of days ago, we purchased a new stove and oven for our house, and it was installed on Friday. I come home from work. I'm all excited. I'm going to roast the first chicken in my new oven. I turn on the oven, and it says you can't turn on the oven until you connect to the internet. And I said, what? And then I had to download an app. I had to give up the password to my Wi-Fi at home. I had to plug it into write it into the program on the oven. And it simply would not turn on unless I was connected to Wi-Fi. I thought, this is crazy. And so I am going to call the company and say, is there a way of your device working without all of that kind of invasiveness? But, you know, who knows?
I don't blame you. I think that actually is going too far when you can't get basic services without being connected to the internet.
Absolutely. So Mark emails and said, I've always said that I'd never own an SUV, and now we have three, including the RAV4 hybrid that we got for our son. What are the best driving SUVs out there in addition to the Germans? Which ones do you like?
Ah, that's a very good question. I'm actually driving one of them today. It's the new Mazda CX-50, which is a compact. It replaces their CX-5. It drives like a German car, even though it's a Japanese design. And I would place it at the top of the list. I think the Honda CR-V, I think the RAV4 hybrid that he bought for his son. To be honest with you right now, anywhere you look in that compact SUV world, almost all of them drive exceedingly well, no matter where they're made. It's just we've kind of gotten the art of making a vehicle handle well and stop well and steer well down to a fine point where there's almost no excuse if something doesn't.
And let's go to the phones to Jim, who's on the line in Parkville. Welcome to Midday with John Davis.
John, first I want to tell you I'm a big fan of your show.
I've Thank
watched
you.
It for many, many years. But a quick question. The other day I went to a Volvo dealer nearby because I was interested in a C60 station wagon, which I've admired for many years. And I drive a 2017 Passat, which I really love. It's a great car. And my Passat gets around town about 34 miles a gallon, a 1.8-liter engine that uses regular gas. The Volvo, which is about the same size as this car, possibly a little bit heavier, but not that much heavier, uses premium gas.
Yep.
And does not get a road mileage as good as my Volkswagen does. And I do have to say that I think Volkswagen made an enormous mistake to stop making the Passats for the United States. They do make them overseas.
Yeah, so what do you think, John? Thanks.
Well,
John, for that
you know,
call.
It is a little bit apples and oranges. The XC60, the Volvo comparable, I would say it's much larger than the Passat wagon. It's a heavier vehicle. It's got more features on it. I think he's got a point. Their top fuel economy is only around 28 miles per gallon, which is actually very good for that size class. But I think if you look at the weight and everything else, you'll find that the Volvo, because it offers more features, is substantially heavier. But I have to say, Volvo seems to be putting almost all of its attention on electrified vehicles and hybrids and plug-in hybrids, and they're really not spending a lot of time increasing the efficiency of their gasoline engines. And that may be what's really going on here. That to get the kind of fuel economy he wants, he's going to have to up his game and go for one of the electrified Volvos.
Let's go real quickly to Andrew in Smithsburg, Maryland. Andrew, welcome to the show with John Davis, and we're in our last minute or so.
Hi,
Andrew. What's on your mind?
Yeah.
Oh, hello. How are you?
We're doing great. We are running out of time. What's your quick question for John Davis?
My quick question is about regenerative technologies, so that we're not putting a strain on any grid, and actually these vehicles are charging themselves.
They do that now, Andrew, with regenerative braking, and there's more of that to come, but so far it's not enough to take the place of plugging in.
And one final question before we finish up here, an email from Steven. What do you know about the electric VW microbus? It's a throwback to the old VW van.
It's terrific. It's bigger than the old van by a large margin. It's coming on the market this year. I think everybody that's seen it loves it. I haven't driven it yet, but it looks terrific.
Well, John, it is always such a pleasure to have you on. You are a wealth of information, and it's really good, solid, important information about all things automotive. And I'm just so grateful for you and look forward to the next time. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom, very much to you and all your listeners. It was terrific to be on with you.
John Davis, he's the creator, the producer, and host of Motor Week, which is produced at MPT right here in Maryland and syndicated on PBS stations across the country. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Maryland Comptroller Brooke Learman joins me. She has recently released a report on the state of the economy in Maryland. We'll talk about what she's found. Plus, Ann Cotton of the Schaefer Center on Public Policy at the University of Baltimore explains how the center is trying to create a pipeline for public service. That's on the way tomorrow. Thanks for joining us today and every day. I am grateful. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, which is on the way right after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.